You're listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world.
We believe God is already at work in your city. We're here to help you ask, what is God doing where I live, and how can I join in?
If you love your city, love the church, and believe God can do amazing things in your city, you're in the right place.
Let's get started.
Jesus didn't come to tell us what to do. He came to show us how to know what to do. Hearing from God and moving with God. Not, you're on your own, good luck, self-protect, self-promote, try not to hit hell at the end of this thing.
Everybody, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the City Gospel Movement podcast. Today with us in the studio, we have Jamie Winship from Identity Exchange, based out of Seattle, Washington, where they help people to live fearlessly in their true identity. Wow, doesn't that sound amazing? So just as an introduction, Jamie and his wife Donna speak all over the world on identity and living in your true identity. Prior to doing this work, Jamie was a decorated DC police officer and was recruited by the CIA. Jamie and Donna then spent 25 years living in Muslim conflict countries. Jamie is an incredible thinker and storyteller, and what I hope you receive today from his learnings is to begin asking yourself, what are you afraid of? What is my true identity? And how do I bring my true self to cities around the world? Jamie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
One of my favorite stories, Jamie, we met many years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, and you were presenting to a small group of leaders in the Portland, Oregon area, and I'm sitting maybe in the second or third row, and here's this guy taking up a lot of space with his body and his voice, this DC cop, CIA guy. And he's starting to kind of get amped up and almost yelling at us, what are you afraid of? And then you said it again. What are you afraid of? You have the King of Kings behind you. And I remember just going, I guess I'm afraid of nothing. And it was really, for me, a very life-altering moment, one I will never forget. And, you know, you've helped so many people identify the fear in their own lives. Where did this start for you?
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a great question. And I think about that a lot after all these years of working on this kind of thing. But for me, just even as you're saying that, it's funny because I think earlier in my life, before I kind of understood this stuff, that my taking up physical space and talking loud was out of my own fear, right? Rather than challenging someone else, I was just my own fear kind of bluffing. But I remember distinctly, I think, standing in the parking lot of the precinct my first night out of the academy to go to work, actually as a police officer, finally, which I'd wanted to do since I was 14. Standing in that parking lot, looking at the precinct, waiting to go and meet my training officer, meet the new squad, all that intimidating stuff. And I was kind of in my mind thinking, like, I've been waiting since I was in eighth grade, 14, to do this job, and now I'm 23, through college, married, and all that. And here I am getting ready to go in. And I was afraid. I was fearful for two reasons. One is because I, you know, what if I don't make it? The great fear. What if I fail? The ultimate human fear is that we're just going to fail in some dream or something that we've wanted to do. And then on top of that, what if I fail as a believer? Like, it's one thing to fail vocationally, I guess, but then what if I fail God? Because in the course of my journey from eighth grade to age 23, I had met Jesus through this witness of this amazing nurse when I was in the hospital. And so I committed my life, Lord, whatever I do for you in this identity, in this vocation, I want to do it. I want to impact others. And I'm standing there realizing, because I've been to the academy, you're not allowed to share your faith as a police officer. So I'm going into this career where that's not allowed. And yet it's what I want to do. And thinking, wow, in order to do this, I've got to be able to, like, probably hear from God to say whatever he says, because there's no way to train in this. There's no book on it. And what if I get in those situations and it's going to get me fired or something? Anyway, the fear was so heavy that, you know, you're a failure before you walk in the door. So I realized part of doing whatever God's going to ask me to do in this career, a large part of it is going to be in dealing with fear itself.
Yeah. And then what happened as your policing career kind of took off and you were starting to solve cases that people didn't think could be solved? And how did this kind of almost stomping on the fear kind of propel your career?
Well, it propelled it because what kills creativity in people is fear. So you can't operate in the creative part of your brain if the reptilian part is all about self-protection and self-promotion. So if the goal of my life is to protect my own life and promote my own life, it doesn't allow for a lot of creativity and experimentation and risking your job. And so when I would have an idea, I would pray and say, God, is there some way beyond my training that I need to think about or consider in this case, because we're stuck or talking to a person, the person's stuck. And I would have these ideas, these thoughts in my intuitive mind, which I attribute to the mind of Christ. When I would have those ideas, it took courage, I guess, faith that what you're going to say is going to achieve what you hope for. So it was just this constant recognizing the fear and actually facing it and having a quick process to set the fear aside and move forward into what was true. So the more I could do that, the faster I could do that, then the more creatively I thought and the quicker I would respond to kind of in your gut, as cops used to say, trust your gut. That's kind of what they're saying.
And so I think it'd be really great for our listeners to hear maybe just an example of how that manifested itself in your day-to-day job as a police officer.
Yeah, well, there's the dramatic and the not so dramatic. The dramatic for me was when I was about my second or third year in, I think my second, and working on my own past, being with a training officer, and it was a day work case, and we were called to a school where a kid didn't get off the bus. We start working backwards. So this is 1984. No computers, nothing like that. We start working backwards and realize he never got on the bus, interviewing kids that were at the bus stop. No one remembers him being there. The parents, you know, left him at the bus stop. They left. But anyway, he's apparently been abducted. And so in 84, this wasn't that common. It wasn't a domestic issue. And so we start working this case and we realize we're like 2 hours behind in it, which is every hour in that kind of situation is like, it's not going to be.
Yeah, super critical.
So we're doing what we're trained to do, set up a perimeter and all that. And so I'm talking to the father of the kid, and I have this strong urge to reassure him that we're going to find the child. And so I do, which is, you don't do that. You don't talk to a parent with something that you can't do. You don't give them false hope. My partner really challenges me when we walk away. Why'd you say that? And I said, I don't know. I just felt like it was the right thing to say. We split up. I get in my car. And I drive down the street a few blocks and I just stop and I just say, Lord, I feel like you're saying something to me. What are you saying to me? You know where this kid is? Do you speak about things like this? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to know? And what do you want me to do? It's just become the theme of my life, those two questions. And so this car comes driving normally down the road from behind me. And I just have this really sick feeling in my stomach. I feel another feeling I've come to know and trust really deeply. And anyway, so I, without fear, I just pull around, I cut the car off and I jump out and I tell the guy, open up your trunk right now. I start yelling, move, get up, get out, open up your trunk. And he gets out and opens up his trunk and the kid is in the trunk of the car. And so, you know, both me and the driver stood there staring with our mouths open. He didn't know how I knew and I didn't know how I knew. And the kid's, you know, okay, and call the detectives, and we make the arrest, and the detective pulls me aside, and he says, how did you know to stop that car? And I didn't know how to articulate it to him. I mean, so that was like, that was early in my career, that was dramatic. It's not often like that, but that was a time I felt like the Lord was saying to me, learn to trust the voice of God, learn to trust it. perfect things in your life that keep an open channel with God. And so then that was sort of like the big Red Sea parting experience for me. And then I thought, wow, a career in anything based on use your training, use your education as far as it'll go. But in those times where it doesn't go far enough, we have the mind of Christ. What does that mean? And fear is the big blockade to going forward in that.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes the words bravery and fearlessness can kind of be synonyms a little bit, but how do you pull those two apart?
Well, yeah, bravery to me is more like just kind of animal instinct, like kick the door in, charge the machine gun nest. There's no real thinking involved. And bravery can often be wrong. You're just in a situation, you do the thing that you feel like you need to do to actually survive. Being courageous is more thoughtful. It's not pressured. It's a deep understanding of like, wow, here's the risks involved of what we're going to do. And it has to do with being encouraged. It's the idea of joy. It's a kind of joy that's measured. So you can go into a situation where a brave person might just react to a certain situation. A person who's courageous will keep moving in a situation that has huge risk, thinking through the whole time over hours or days. Whereas bravery to me is a sudden, we need to do this right now, and it's more reactive.
Yeah. And I know that that has come out of all of the years of whether it's being a DC police officer, CIA, living in Muslim countries for over 25 years, and now living in Seattle, and you have started Identity Exchange. Tell us a little bit about just what Identity Exchange is and why start this now?
Well, so Identity Exchange is really kind of what it says. It's the idea that most of us, most humans are actually functioning in an identity that's created by themselves through fear, through shame, through trauma, through negative perception. And so we're operating in a false identity. And an encounter with Jesus, an encounter with God is an opportunity for that false identity to be exchanged for what's true. And so then we're able to walk upright in our true self, our true identity, our whole self, which is where the way of my being matches the truth of my being. They're actually in unity. What I do and who I am is balanced and thoughtful and productive. And so it was the only thing that worked with militant folks who were operating in a hugely false identity based on real trauma and worldview. But it was their projecting of their own fear and false identity onto a world that would react in a false identity and fear, and you have a war. So working through all those years, but then coming back into the U.S. and just being back for a short time and seeing the level of division and conflict among groups in the U.S. that have identified themselves in groups and sort of warring parties, all based on fear. So we thought, wow, what we need is some type of process to get back into what's true and stop being so fearful, which it produces conflict in me and in other people. So that's, we endeavor to like, let's present a small process that people can do that's not dramatic, that engages in exchanging the false identity for the true and moving in what's true.
Yeah, so you and Donna have just kind of this mission of living fearlessly in your true identity. And I think that probably resonates with every single human being walking the planet, right? Whether they know Jesus or not, but of how fear manifests itself in all of our lives. So how do you kind of help people in this first steps of even recognizing your true identity? And where does that come from? And, you know, how do we separate the true from the false identity? I know that's a loaded question, but maybe you can kind of start unpacking that a little bit.
Well, so all of us, all humans, you know, we face negative situations growing up in our life, trauma. And trauma is relative to people. You can't tell one person they haven't been in trauma because it wasn't the same trauma you were in. So it's relative, but all people encounter in this world trauma, negative situations. And when we encounter those situations, we will form a view of ourselves. So if a teacher says to a student, you know, you're not a very good reader and you're in third grade, or you're not in the high level group, or you're not on the select soccer team or something, then you start to form a view of yourself that's negative, that's false. Again, I'm not as good as those people. I'm not a good reader. And then rather than just like dying, you figure out how to compensate for that false identity. You figure out ways to try and deal with it and cope with it without ever really actually dealing with the false identity. It's just like, okay, I'm not a good reader. Therefore, there's certain kind of jobs I'm just not going to be able to get them. There's certain challenges I just won't be able to face. And that false identity just gains momentum through every negative experience in your life and becomes solidified. So that by the time you're 45, you don't even remember necessarily where you realized you're not as good as other people. And so when there's opportunity that may be in front of you, either you won't even recognize the opportunity, or you might entertain it briefly and then say, yeah, but you know, I'm really not. Then you revert back to this mentality of second grade. It's like, well, I'm not as good as that person in this constant comparison world that we live in, where, you know, it's celebrity everything. And if you can't sell 10 million books, what's the point? You know, you're never going to be like that person. So this false identity just gets solidified within us and we start moving in it. And the signs of it, it's negative emotion. It's negative perception. It's self-protection and self-promotion. It's I can't ever be who I really am because of the risk involved of exposure, that they'll see I'm a failure, or I'll run away, or I'll drop the ball, or whatever that is. I can tell you, everyone that's listening to this knows this feeling, this negative emotion of, and it's typically fear. So how do we move from that false identity into the true self? When the true self really can't be offended, it can't be intimidated. You know, the only one that can intimidate you is yourself. No one actually has the power to offend you, intimidate you,
make you. Yeah, but we don't really know that, right? Like we convinced ourselves that's not true.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the thought of it is, I think, too frightening. So then, what's the process? We walk people through the process of let's name the false. We just call it truth telling, mind change, form change. That's how we do it. Truth telling, tell the truth about what I really believe about myself at the deepest level, right? Whether you're a believer or not a believer, but if as a Christian or as a biblical person, we might use the word confession, which just means to truth tell. It's not apologizing. It's telling the truth. I think I'm not good enough to do this, and allowing truth to be spoken. I feel like in different conflicts that we're dealing with inside our own country and inside our own cities, no one will tell the truth. No one will say this doesn't work. Just that. This doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is because all of us are terrified of failing or losing or something.
Right, right. Yeah. That conflict kind of breeds out our own insecurities, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so if it's kind of funny, because if you're going to have a peace negotiation between two countries that are terrified and that are their whole goal is to self-protect and self-promote during the process, you're never going to have peace.
Right.
Because I don't have peace inside myself. How am I going to gain peace between me and someone else when I'm at war with my own false identity all the time? So the idea is, how do we move into what's true about me? Then what's true about me in that process, I tell the truth about what I believe about myself. And then I need to listen to or open my mind to what is actually true about me. What does God say about me? Sometimes we say, if you're speaking to absolute love, which is what God is absolute, unconditional, other-focused, self-sacrificial love. If you are asking that who you are, it would never say back to you, you're a poor reader. Just so,
right,
you know, you're
right. Done
everything else, but you're a lousy speaker. It would always affirm the truth of who we are. That's what God does.
How do you help people, just like you said, kind of open the door to hear that? I think one of the analogies I've heard you use in the past is, oftentimes we will even put on Jesus a false identity, right?
Right.
He was a Jew, but in
right.
the scripture, it's different, you know, maybe kind of help draw that parallel for people to kind of hear, because our identities can only come from God.
Right. Absolutely. So if we believe that we're knit together in our mother's womb by God with an identity that he gave us, and it's unique, never created before, never will be created again, me or you and our unique identity. And so I think it's a tragedy to God that we would adopt some false identity, which produces separation between us and God and us and ourselves and us and other people. And separation is the great wound of humanity, which is the term sin. God's not saying you're all a bunch of moral failures. He's saying you're separating yourself from a God who will always be with you and always for you. So it's even delusional, the idea that we're separating from God. But that's what we believe, and that's how we act. So we don't participate in what God has for us. So what is Jesus? Jesus is the, as you're saying, he's the blueprint of humanity. He's the picture of a human walking around in absolute pure identity that comes from and only from God, that he only does what he sees the Father doing and he only says what the Father says, I think is a model to us. So Jesus isn't walking around saying to his disciples, imitate every word I say, imitate every step I take, imitate how I dress. He's not saying that. What he's modeling is, what is the way to know things? How do I know who I am? How do I know what to say to this person? How do I know where to work? He wants the disciples to ask him that question. And then he says, because I know the Father. I know I can see the Father. So Jesus didn't come to tell us what to do. He came to show us how to know what to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Hearing from God and moving with God. Not you're on your own, good luck, self-protect, self-promote, try not to hit hell at the end of this thing. Very different. It's very much this beautiful relational oneness with God in the identity that he calls me, respecting in other people the identity that he calls them and not what I call them or they call themselves. What does God call you? And speaking to that in other people, who, even if they don't believe in it. This is how we worked with militants, is speaking to the true them. This is what evangelism is, or sharing your faith. It's calling out the true person that you're speaking to and not fighting against their false identity because their false identity attacks me. That's the sacrificial part.
So what happens when we are living in our false identity and then we're in a vocation that we're kind of ramming up against, right? So yeah. I would love to kind of hear about just how, when we live in our true identity, what's possible, and when we live in a false identity, what then isn't possible?
Well, so in the false identity, for sure, so you have a group of employees and whatever, it doesn't matter what the vocation is, you have people trying to work together that because of their own false view of themselves and their low view of themselves, they're either self-protecting or self-promoting, and they're separate from other people. We're constantly living lives of separateness and scarcity. That's what's happening to us because we believe this lie that we're not good enough and God's actually probably not for us. He's not all that helpful. So you live this very sinful or separate life. And then so your interaction with other people is either to protect yourself or promote yourself. People even do as Christians, like, I won't even be in other Christian groups. I got to be in my own Christian group. I've got to protect myself from the other groups and promote myself. So I only can stay around people that think exactly like me, that agree with everything I agree with. So in a job, on a squad, in a boardroom, whatever, when we're in these groups watching them, you can watch people self-promoting and self-protecting. If they don't get their agenda forward, it hurts them. It means they're a failure. It reaffirms the failure mentality. So they'll fight. They'll either fight to get it or they'll just give up. They'll just, you know, be passive aggressive. So that's what happens in the workplace, in politics, all of that. In a room where the people are functioning in their true identity, they realize that they are unique and incomparable to anyone around them. There's no need to compare. I don't have to compare because I can't be that other person. I don't want to be that other person. I have a unique identity, and that person can never take my place. So I don't have any need to self-protect or self-promote. But what I do recognize is that I need these other identities in order to move forward the things even I want to see in my life. So it demands community. A person in their true self never wants to be separate and alone. They realize that's the worst thing for humans, is to be isolated and alone with a feeling of powerlessness. And that produces all kinds of violence that we're seeing in our country. That makes middle school kids kill kids in their class because they feel so isolated, alone in this dark, trapped identity. They're trying to be seen. They're trying to make people pay attention to them so they can be in relation. So in a room where the people working together have this healthy sense of self, not only do they not self-protect and self-promote, when another person around them melts down or lashes out or something, they can look at that person and say, wow, you know what? I have mercy on you because I know you're speaking from your own woundedness and your own fear. So I'm going to love you and I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to cut that off and drop that to the floor because I don't get my identity from what you think of me. I have mercy on you and I'm going to work to see the real you come forward in this job. And boy, you have an HR department that knows how to do that. You don't have to have conferences on racism and sexism and all that stuff, because the true identity won't compare people, won't talk to people in that manner.
Yeah.
So that's a great business goal.
If you're listening to this podcast, you likely are a dreamer who wants to make things happen in your city. But the thing we know is you can't go alone. Have you heard of the City Gospel Movement's coaching program? This may be a great resource for you. If you have an idea you're wanting to brainstorm around with someone for an hour to get some new ideas, or maybe you're just getting started in the City Gospel Movement work and you want to touch base with someone who's experienced, check out citygospelmovements.org/coaching to find out more about our coaching program. You'll fill out a form and we'll connect you to a coach who would be a good fit for you. Again, that's citygospelmovements.org/coaching. We can't wait to support you and the work you're doing.
You always say, you know, look out when you can really tap into that place of knowing who you are and that it's just between you and God. It's not you and these people. Right?
Right.
And that identity that is coming from the Father. And then when I can tap into that, then it's look out what is possible. Right?
Absolutely. Right. That's right. Yeah. Because you're looking through, you're seeing what the Father sees, what God sees when he sees you. You're seeing the potential he sees. You're seeing the healthy pride he feels when he looks at you. Like, this is my unique creation. This is my unique identity in this. Watch what happens. And then in that true self, you see potential because you're not looking through the eyes of self-protection and self-promotion and fear. All you're looking at is going, wow, you know what we could do here? We, all of us, not me alone. You know what we could do here? And you want to be together and you want to move forward because it's really endless, the potential, beyond what you can ask or imagine. In whatever field, you know, whether you're stocking shelves in the most inventive, creative way ever seen, or you're, you know, leading a company, whatever, it doesn't matter. The joy is there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this idea of what the false identity brings of self-protection and self-promotion is really killing our ability to work together. And we see this in church unity. So, you know, in the City Gospel Movement space, one of the biggest challenges, although we're seeing great efforts of people coming together in a city, but still one of the biggest challenges is bringing churches on board to really work together, nonprofits, churches, organizations that would come around a common goal. And, you know, what would you say to people who are down in the trenches trying to do this kind of work? And it's tough, right?
It is. It is. It is tough. Of course, my main responsibility, of course, is my own relationship with the Lord, my own relationship with other people. That's why the commandment, the main commandment, is love God, love your neighbor in the same healthy way that you love yourself. Like, that's the key, that little right there, God, myself, and then others. So that's where I'm just working in the sphere that I can work in. But people can't do what they've never seen. Humans can only create from what exists, where God creates from nothing. So humans need to see models of people who are walking in wholeness in their true identity. I can go in and run a program among at-risk kids that's a brilliant curriculum, but I myself am living in self-protection and self-promotion. I might even be teaching the class out of pure guilt because I ought to be doing something. What those kids need to see is a person who moves in their true identity and who can walk them into understanding true identity. When a kid gets a hold of that, this is the idea. Jesus says it. Once you understand what I represent and what I'm modeling to you, it's better for you that I go so that you yourselves can become this with the mind of Christ and the Spirit of the living God. You don't need to watch me anymore. You need to be it. You need to experience it and then demonstrate it to other people. That's real discipleship. It's not a workbook. It's us living out true identity and wholeness and fearlessness in front of a world that's never seen leaders do it. They watch leaders that are operating in scarcity models, fighting for limited funding, competing with other NGOs and churches for people. That's what they see. It's no different than the lost world. It's this same belief that we're not going to win. We're actually losing. So let's talk about who we can connect with that's like us. Where's the money? All this awful kind of stuff. And so it's hard to go work with another group when you think, in a way, they're kind of the competition. Mm-hmm. What if they get the funding and we don't get it? Or what if they get 100 people out of this and we don't get any? Like, that's what happens. And that reveals our hearts so deeply. So deeply. God, I've got to have this many people in my church to keep this budget going, or you're not going to be able to do anything. See, then that's all the way back to the confession. Oh, what's your view of God? What's your view of resources? Is there never enough? And you can tell that because how often money is the main decision maker and topic. That's a better indicator than anything of what's God's role in this.
Yeah. But where have you seen this in your, maybe in some recent times, of where people are really starting to not only live in their true identity, but the walls are coming down to be able to really work together?
Yeah, well, I mean, as soon as you start to like make people pay attention to this and aware of it, you can see it begin immediately in themselves. But we were in a public high school a couple of months ago, 9th through 12th graders, and in a public venue, so we weren't in there preaching of Jesus per se, but we were talking about these issues of true identity, false identity, negative emotion, transformational thinking with these students. And so, you know, when the students are in the room, I was just asking them the question. We were in psychology classes and history classes. And so it was interesting because in the history class, they were studying Stalinism. And I said, well, what do you guys think of Stalin? You're studying Stalin, the person. What do you think of him? And this is their summation. He's a bad guy. Like, there's a classic how we classify people like that.
Right.
He's a bad guy. Why? Because he was a communist or because he killed people. And I said, yeah, but if Stalin was in here talking to you, he could tell you probably pretty well why killing a quarter of his population was a good idea. Like, he's not stupid. He's deceived, but he's not stupid. He actually believes something about himself and self-protection, self-promotion that makes, like Cain thought with Abel, the death of other people a good idea. Now, lots of foreign policy people think this way. Like, right. That country just didn't exist, we would be a lot better off because they're a threat to it and all that. So anyway, so I said to them, so where do you think Stalin came up with this idea that he's in such trouble or such a difficult situation, or he's such an egomaniac that he has to eliminate competition around him? Where do you think he came up with that idea? And then they were thinking about it because they were talking about child development in the psychology. They said, yeah, maybe somewhere young, someone hurt him. I said, exactly. Yes, exactly. So think of a negative emotion you've had this week that made you think about hurting yourself or someone else in any way, gossip, social media, attack them, or someone did it to you that produced that emotion in you. Can you feel that emotion right now? You should have seen their yes.
Wow, yes. Wow, powerful.
So it's called confession. And I said, when did you feel it? When? And then they start zeroing in like this. Okay. And then I said, okay, now when you felt that someone said something about you, you saw something on social media that you'll never be, that you think you should be, that you'll never be, what did you call yourself? And it was just silent in the room. You could, no joking around, silence. I said, what you're calling yourself is an identity. my body doesn't look right. I'm not smart enough. I'm not going to get into the right school. I don't have parents that can bribe people to get me in the right school, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we're in this deep confession of truth telling. And I said, now that day, you're taking on an identity that's not true. The way you know it's not true is it's hurting you. Your system is saying, like, this is hurting me, but we don't know what to do with it. And so I said, so let's just do this little exercise. Let's just close our eyes and imagine you could take that negative emotion, that identity, and hold it in your hand. How do you see it? And they would picture things. You know, it's dirt, it's whatever, rocks. Okay, set it aside. Put it aside. This is, your mind has the capacity to envision this. Put it aside. Okay, now I want you to just think about if you were talking to absolute love. Absolute love was standing right in front of you, knowing that you've taken out this false identity and set it over here. And you're looking at absolute love, and however you think of that is standing in front of you. What does absolute love call you? You should have seen their face.
Oh, that is really awesome.
Tears, tears. Somehow, all humans can hear the voice of the person. It's not the stars. It's not that. They don't, and the kids in there that had any kind of church background, it was Jesus immediately for them. That's what it was. Any religious background, it was God. It was that. It's like that's how the human heart goes in that direction. But what was so beautiful when I asked them, like, okay, who called you that? Who calls you that? Like, where did that voice come from? Like, was it you? They all said no. And I said, how do you know it wasn't you? And they said, we would have never called ourselves that.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that. It had to be something outside of ourselves. And that's the beginning of the journey towards the kingdom of God. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of it is that when we're the ones running that conversation, we are the kingdom. We are the presence of God. And so we can protect the room and guard them into this very beautiful process. The final thing I'll say about that is the teacher of the class, they had a test on human development later on in the week. She sent me some of the students' essays about how they had discovered their identity, their true identity in that conversation. Now the teacher is a believer. So now she has all this room to move, and the school's asked us to think about writing a curriculum for them on identity. So that's what one person can do. Yeah, I know you know this.
I know.
Do this kind of thing.
I think it's so great. And I think it segues really nicely into, you know, just that idea. One of the things that I learned a long time ago from you is sharing your faith is not hard. We make it hard, but it's not hard. It's just saying, hey, I have some faith. Can I share it with you? And,
right.
You know, I just think that just like what you just described in the school, right, is oftentimes we get almost tense thinking about sharing our faith. But when we live in our true identity, when we are not full of fear and we're living in our true identity, we're not self-protecting and self-promoting. Now, how would you share with people like what that looks like?
Yeah. And just like you said it, it's because we're not doing a sales pitch to try and get people to switch teams, you know, that kind of thing, which is intimidating and frustrating, and it's a debate and all that. But just this beautiful overflow of my own identity coming out in all its fullness and love, joy, peace, patience, the fruit of the Spirit like that. Then when I'm talking to another person, because I'm not focused on myself, I'm actually focusing on the other person with love, with loving the other. When I'm talking to them, I'm listening, I'm paying attention to them with the very human things that people say about their own woundedness or pain. People will always say something about it. And so when you're just in a normal conversation with people, and we were doing this with the high school kids after school, who were asking these questions about how do you talk to other people. I said, what we just did in the classroom, how many kids during the day are you talking to that say, I'm really mad about something, or I'm really discouraged about something, or they're insulting someone else. And you just say, well, how does that make you feel that you might not get into college, or you don't know what to do? That was a lot of their questions. We don't know what to do after we graduate. How does it make you feel not to know what you're going to do? And then just keep asking them, how does that make you feel? Well, it makes me feel like I don't have a plan, or like it's all on me and I might make a mistake, and all these negative things like this. As soon as they start doing that with you, it's like, well, where did you learn that you're on your own? Like, where did that come? Where do you have the idea that you're on your own? And then you're into confession. And they may say something deep about, well, you know, my parents split when I was like, and then there you go into it. And so what, if you're going to communicate the beauty of the kingdom, the good news of the kingdom with anyone, start where Jesus starts. He starts in their pain. He starts mm-hmm. in people's fear and doubt. That's where he starts with them. And then he moves them up into what's true, because the fear, pain, and doubt is built in lies and deceptions, accusations made against them or their world. And so he starts in that pain. He turns them towards the kingdom and starts walking them in that direction. That isn't true. You are not alone. I used to think I was alone. I've discovered I'm not alone. I have an identity. You don't have to get to that college to have an identity, you know, that those sorts of things. And it's this very beautiful, organic, you know, the other big, it's a big issue we can talk about some other time, but we're not factory workers being judged on production rates. You know,
that's right.
That's how Christians talk. Like, what are you doing for God? I was talking to a guy the other day. He told me, a guy I prayed with, he's an HR guy, was been in a deep depression for a year where he couldn't come out of his room. And he said, my whole life was I went to bed at night knowing I didn't do what God wanted me to do. Hmm. I mean, like what? Like
guilt and shame.
Yeah. And what's the standard? And it's the standard of some podcast he heard or people that he, you know, that's why I hope when people listen to this, they're like, oh my gosh, this is like liberating. You know?
Yeah. Freedom.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you realize that God isn't interested in developing people who can work for him, he wants a relationship. He's God with us. Hmm. And so any day to another person is that starts in their pain and walks them towards freedom and knowing their true identity and the God who gave it to them and died to make it happen is beautiful. And that process may go for 60 seconds or 14 months or whatever it is, but it's, I don't get my identity for how many people got saved, mm-hmm. right? It's beautiful. Wow, the Lord's inviting me to share with this person about pain and walking towards him until he says, stop talking or it's over, or, and that's it. And well done. Beautiful. Well done. I got him. I'm with them. You know, that kind of lovely, yeah. No stress. But it's so joyful, it's hard not to talk about it with people. You know, like you don't, you know, someone says, man, this job's awful and I'll never get out of it. I was like, that's not true. Why do you think you're stuck in this job? Why don't you, there's a million jobs. Yeah, but I'm worried about money. Ah, when did you become afraid about money in your life? Like that.
Yep.
Just keep walking into truth.
I think it's, you know, it's so much of when we can unlock our own selves. And when we can walk in that true identity, then our job, as you say, you know, it's not like we're on a factory line, but then our joy is to help other people unlock that same freedom.
Absolutely. And every craves freedom. That's right. Yes. And that's abiding, you know, that's abiding. And that's why the scripture says, be ready in season and out of season to give an answer for the hope that's within you, not the polemics and the apologetics of your theology, but the hope that's within you. So a hopeless person has a hard time bringing hope to other people. I don't care how religious you are or theological you are. You can be theological and committed and religious and absolutely hopeless. But a person filled with hope can share hope at multiple levels of beauty, and the Spirit of God moves in that kind of truth. So it's actually pretty joyful to do with people.
Well, and imagine a city or a city of pastors that are unlocked and fearless, right? And
right.
You know, I've heard you talk about being a pioneer, and oftentimes I'll say to city movement leaders, you know, that they are in many ways what we would kind of consider a pioneer, doing this a bit rogue work, if you will, where there really isn't a blueprint of how people have done this before, of just really unifying the city together around the gospel, and then kind of having this vision of what is possible if we are unified.
Right.
Talk a little bit. I love how you kind of unpack the idea of pioneer, and you know, we use that term in kind of a nice way, but it really isn't nice. So share a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the word pioneer in scripture is used twice in Acts and twice in Hebrews, and it means to be the first cause of something, to be causal. that we're not reacting to situations, we're actually causing things to happen. I feel like a lot of us as Christians are just reacting to stuff, and we're not reacting in a lot of healthy ways. We actually just want to separate ourselves from problems in our own little communities, and we're back to that word separation, which is the word sin. Any act to separate from God's creation is dangerous and deadly. So pioneer in Hebrews 2 and in Hebrews 12, it's referring to Jesus as the first cause or the cause of our faith. And what Jesus did causally in the world was took away death. I love how Hebrews 2 says it not only took away death from the one who held the power of death, which is Satan, but then took away the slavery of the fear of death. So actually, death is not an issue for believers or anyone really, because Jesus has dealt with that. But what hurts us is the fear of death. It's back to that fear, that vague deception, accusation kind of fear that's built in complete falsehood. So Jesus took that away. Because he took away death, he took away our fear of death. We have the potential of not being afraid ever of death. Not just physical death, but death that our little program didn't work. Death that the person doesn't like me. Death that, you know, my wife got mad at me. All those deaths, the thousand deaths we die during the day that destroy us. Resiliency is kind of the popular term for we need to be more resilient, because these little slices, these little hurts kill us and we don't know how to recover from them. So Jesus has taken that away. So in my true identity, I'm not afraid of what people say about me because it doesn't hurt me. I don't get my identity what from people think or what I do or what I have. So I can become causal. I become the cause of things, not just reacting and protecting and promoting. So I become causal. And so what does that mean to go out into a city that's filled with issues and conflicts? We become the cause of love, joy, peace, patience, all these things that where we can say, there is another way to think about this. There's ways to think about things that we haven't thought about yet. Why are we just conforming to old patterns that don't work? Or maybe they did work in the 1950s, but they don't work currently. We need to let those things die and let resurrection occur to the new things that can become, and we're constantly being transformed by the renewing of our mind, presenting everything as a living sacrifice, our bodies. Here's my sacrifice to you, God. I'm giving myself to you. Take away my conformity to old coping mechanisms, patterns, evangelism styles, and transform my mind into the more excellent way. What's the way now in the present tense? And with homelessness, with racism, with gender issues, all of this stuff, not one aggressive group beats the other one, comes into power, beats it for a while, then the next group beats that one, and then it's just the same old pattern. But like, there's a new way to think about education. There is a way to think about the issue of people in homelessness situations that we haven't thought of yet. I'm telling you, and our next generation are the ones that will come up with these solutions if we don't fill them with fear about everything as we raise them. No discipline, no field of study believes that they have figured out everything to figure out about their field. All of them, every science, all of them would say, we know a little tiny bit about all that's out there still to know, except Christians. They talk like we've got it all nailed down. We've got the whole thing figured out. When we don't, it's being causal. Every generation being causal in their own identity, passing that beautiful, true identity, sense of hearing and knowing God onto the next generation, and letting them become causal, not trying to stick them in our old patterns. You should see students when you're talking like this to them. Even millennials and all, it's like, that's what we want. We want to be, teach us what you know, show us how to understand identity, teach us how to hear from God, and let us go. And we will figure out what to do with climate change and all these things.
Well, I love that word causal. I mean, it really resonates with me. And I think it probably does with a lot of our leaders that are doing this kind of work. And it's also about trying things and being willing to fail. Amen. And I think sometimes that, we forget that the failure, I mean, we hear it all the time, right? It's good to fail. You tell your kids, that's how you learn, right?
Yeah.
And yet we really aren't too willing to fail. And so when you're causal, you have to be willing to fail.
That's right. Because our definition of failure doesn't come from God. It comes from the enemy. So the idea is that Jesus never went into a situation thinking he was in a win-lose scenario. Even though things happen to him, like, you know, this town doesn't want him to heal anybody and he walks away, or some people that are considered disciples leave him or deny him. Jesus never considered that failure, right? So he never looks at a situation and goes, wow, this thing could really go south on us. Because as soon as you think that way, you have to self-protect and self-promote. You have to.
Yep.
As soon as you realize, oh boy, there's a potential loss here. And unfortunately, we raise our kids teaching them that there's a win-lose scenario to life. Instead of what Jesus is saying is, life is a win. Life in your true identity in the kingdom is a win. I am with you. I'm proud of you. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Let's go. And listen to this, he says, with me, you cannot die. And then he does it in front of us. And he fails in the greatest possible way. He's mocked and just, and boom, there he is again. Here he is. Not only is he back.
He's back.
He's back better than ever. And he's saying to us, this is your biggest nightmare. I went through it. Look.
Yeah.
Stop being afraid of this from now on. This is not a fear anymore. Let's go. Let's take the planet, so to speak, like it was supposed to be in Genesis 1.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody listening can kind of get a sense of like, okay, put me in, coach. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah, no, that should be our attitude, right?
Yeah. So in closing, you know, I would just love to have you just share, you know, right to the leaders and people who are listening, especially if they've never heard you before, and kind of heard these ideas of identity and the identity exchange piece. What would you say to people who are just kind of hearing this for the first time and are curious about, okay, well, what do I do?
Yeah. So they can certainly look to us as a resource if they want to, but it's simply this. I think there's two things you can do. One of the simple exercises we do with people is just take a bit of quiet time. You can do it today. You can do it whenever. Take some quiet time, breathe deep, and let yourself, imagine yourself being in any place, anywhere in the world. Just be in a place that you would want to be if you could be in that place above any other place. No spiritualizing, no requirement, no. You can just be wherever you want to be right now. Imagine yourself. The beautiful thing about imagination that God gave us imagination, not Satan. God gave us imagination. The ability to image forth the unseen real. That's what the imagination is for. And it's in perfect peace when it's fixed on God. Our minds are in perfect peace when they're fixed on God because we trust in Him. So image yourself being in a place where you just want to be. And write down what that looks like, that place. Because that question is not a question of location. It's a question of existence. It's the word be. Where would you be if you could be anywhere? And then once you're being in that place, then look around and what are you doing? That's a vocational question. What are you doing in that place? Are you with kids? Are you alone? Are you singing? Like, these are closer to your true heart than all the nonsense out here. Like, this is the closer to your true being and what God put there. And then just allow yourself to be in that place. And in that place, you can just ask the Lord, in this place, what do you call me? How do you see me? How do you see me, Lord? And write down what goes through your mind, because these are, I'm being where I'm supposed to be. I'm being who I'm supposed to be. What do you say to me, Lord, in this process? We do this with people a lot. And then you can take time and go, what are all the reasons that this is never going to happen? Why? What are all the names that aren't this name that I have? And this is the false. So that in your mind, you have a distinction between what's false and what's true. One brings joy, one brings rest, the other brings fear, shame. Just that clear awareness. So it's kind of this little four-step attention, awareness, enunciation, we call it listening to God, and then act from that. Mm-hmm. How do I get to that place? How do I be that person? If you're not paying attention to it and you're not aware of it, you're never going to wander into it.
Right, that's right.
Intentional. And that's what I think the Bible's all about, is people discovering that as they encounter the God who wants to be in relationship with them. They start to find that place and be that person that they've always been. They just haven't believed it. I think that's the beauty of the gospel.
It really is. And I think that that's a perfect way to finish. And I hope that people will take that 5, 10, 15 minutes and just do that exercise. I know I've done it many times. And, you know, this isn't something that you do once and you go, oh, I know who I am. And, you know, you have to constantly come back and right. Okay, what are the negative voices that I'm hearing? What are the negative thoughts? What's the truth? Confess the truth.
Right.
Be truth tellers, and then let God fill you back up. And now you're ready to go back out the door, right? And it's just, better at it, but it is still a constant process.
That's right. It becomes second nature, but it's like anything. You have to keep practicing until it's your default thinking.
Yeah.
It's fall into the true and not the false, yeah.
Yeah, but it does constantly bring us back to Jesus, and that's, you know, there's right. Nothing better.
Nope.
Well, nowhere. Jamie, I could have this conversation for a lot longer. Thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, if you're like me, I will binge watch Jamie Winship sermons on Google. So if you just want to Google Jamie Winship, you can listen to a whole bunch of this stuff. But if you want to learn more about what they're doing at Identity Exchange, it's identityexchange.com. Really fascinating things they're doing, both in the faith sector and the private sector as well. And if you want to follow them on Instagram, it's the Jamie Winship. So Jamie, thanks again. You're awesome.
Thank you for having me. Love what you're doing, by the way.
Awesome. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the City Gospel Movement's podcast, where we celebrate and accelerate collaborative gospel work in cities around the world. For more resources, show notes, and to get connected to gospel movements around the globe, visit citygospelmovements.org. That's citygospelmovements.org. Keep believing in what God can do in your city.